12 questions on assignments, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. I would guess you guys are all getting pretty excited about getting out of here. I'm not handing that out till tomorrow. You know about assignment 9, right? Why is that man smiling back there? He did it, yeah. He found the link to it and did it. No questions? You guys all have this figured out? Oh, yes. There is one in there. There's actually one in the on the network example, because that's how I put text up on the window in the applet. Well, I think all of the assignments that do anything that have a text string on the window use drawstring. I mean, it's very straightforward. It's g.drawstring. It's in the paint method. It has to be in the paint method. It's g.drawstring, the string that you want to draw, and the x and y location. If you what? You have to read from the file. You get the string. And then what you have to do is you have to figure out how to get the string from the point where you read the file into the paint method. And the problem that you run into there is that the paint method isn't called directly by you, it's called indirectly. So you have to figure out an avenue from where you read the string to the paint method, and after you read the string, you call repaint. Oh, actually, when we get to, I'll just write one real fast. It's in assignment 6 in the thing I have posted, but we'll look at it and we'll go ahead and do it. We'll go ahead and do it and make it work. Yes, sir. Right, right, either mouse clicked or mouse entered or mouse exited or one of those. Right, and you have to keep doing that till you run out of the whole list. Or what you can do is you can type in Java Listener Tutorial at google.com and you will get up. There's a page that they maintain on the java.sun.com, which has a list of all of the listeners and all of their methods and the ones that have adapters for them and so on. It's a nice chart. And then that saves you a lot of time. Or you could just use mouse adapter. Mouse adapter is the one that Mouse handler is the one that I made that extends mouse adapter. Well, mouse adapter or window adapter or any of the adapter classes have all of the methods implemented as stubs, and then you just override the one you want to. Well, I put up that example last night, yesterday, on the window one. It's the one where we have add window listeners. You know how we do that in the frame, and then I override one method. Remember that? Add window listener, new window. Public void window closing.
I was going to try to do something like that, but I thought you said you could do that in a whole other method, not only window.
I made an inner class, and the inner class was a window listener, and the window listener class overrode just one of the methods. Well, we'll work on that then, too. When we get the gizmo going, it sounds like we're going to have a night of doing some examples. Yes? You mean a hierarchy? Right, so I have... Like that? So these are all on the same level. If every one of these classes has a method with the same interface as that, but those methods do something different, so that this one says, hi, I'm class 1, this one says, hi, I'm class 2, this one says, hi, I'm class 3, this one says, hi, I'm top class. You have a method that says, who are you? Well, these are on the same hierarchy. It's just that these ones here don't extend each other, they extend that. But yes, you can have... As long as any of these has the same method interface, like the who are you method, and this one does one thing and that one does something else, then you've got a polymorphic situation. And then what you do is you can make a variable of any of those three classes and store it into... an object of any of those classes and store it in a variable of this type, and then you've done assignment 8. As long as these classes are the hierarchy you used in assignment 3. Because remember that the hardest thing to get across here is you have to be using the code from assignment 3, not just importing it, using it. Making objects of that type. So the first thing I look for in any of these later assignments is I say, have you made an object of that class from assignment 3? If you haven't, then you didn't do it. Yeah. Well, that's kind of tricky. That's like a legal issue. So you used assignment 3, but not polymorphically. You used something else polymorphically. You made up a new class. Well,
what you used a class from assignment 3 and extended it to...
No. He didn't do it. What he did is he did all the assignment 3 stuff, and then he made up some new classes that were polymorphic.
But couldn't you take the highest one of his? New one. Make it an extension of something in 3.
Yes, he could.
And then marry it to sort of
glass that. Yes, he could. Yes. Oh, well. I don't want to get into any legal discussion. I'm really looking to see if you understand what I'm talking about. You obviously understand what I'm talking about. I'm hoping to do that tonight. Yeah, each one of these would say extends top class. That's what puts them all at the same level. Yeah.
I do remember the fact that you are going to show us how to deploy the classes we already made.
If you look, we'll see how much time we have. If you look in the JavaBeans handout that's online, it talks in there. I wrote it, about making a jar file. There is, for your information, a command that comes with the Java development kit called jar. If you are a Unix user, you already know how to use that command because it's identical to tar. It's the same thing as tar, only it makes a Java archive. And it ends up making a file called .jar. There are a few subtle differences. The flags are almost identical, minus X for extract, minus T for table of contents, and so on. There is something called a manifest, which you'll find out about for Java Beans. That's why it's in the Java Beans handout, which lists what classes and so on are in there, the text file. Any JPEGs, GIF files that go with your application go in there. Remember, Java does not make executable files. It makes .class files, which are bytecode, which are only executable by a Java runtime engine. So, I keep getting this question, can I make a double-clickable executable application? The answer is yes and no. Yes, obviously you can, because people distribute applications this way. But what those applications really do is they start up Java, which then runs your startup class. That's what makes it executable. So the world's simplest executable class is just a class like an exec file, a text file which you can run from a command line, like a DOS command line, where you say run file name, and then inside there it says Java, your startup class. That's a very simple way to do it. The JBuilder, the new versions of it, and MetroWorks, and a couple of other environments actually have a command that says create an executable file, and they make a nice executable file with an icon and all the rest. And those icons, everything ends up going into the jar file. If you get JDK, one of the things you discover is that all of the classes are either in a .jar file or a zip file. That's where they put everything. They compress all of the bytecode so it doesn't, you know, take up too much space. Because bytecode, if you look at it, actually ends up being an editable ASCII type file. So they have compressed these things, and all of the folders, the paths to all of the subfolders and so on, are all included in those. So you kind of get it as one big ball of Java stuff.
It
actually goes and it runs the jar command. It looks at the table of contents, see if what you're wanting is in there, where it is, goes and gets it, extracts that one piece, which is just the same as saying jar minus X and then the class name, right, which means extract that class. So that slows things down a little bit, computers are fast these days, so who cares? I did that last night. Did you read the handout? Did it make any sense? Oh, and then a class is a class that you define inside another class. Well, it wasn't an abstract class. What it did is I wrote a class that extended the window adapter, and it overrode one method of that other class. Right? I just inserted one method that I needed. And because I was using a class that already existed, Java went out and it said, oh, look, There's the class. There are all of the methods. This must be a new version of it, which is overriding that one method. And I could have put as many methods as I wanted there, one after the other, in exactly the same syntax, because instead of it being window adapter, it was really my frame $1. That was the name of my new class. Remember, because each inner class the compiler encounters gets appended with dollar sign and then the number. And it just, generally they are used, if at all, they're used for things like handling buttons and whatnot, where you have an inner class that listens for the button. And all it does is implement action performed. So it's a kind of a shorthand where what you can do is you can say, add action listener BH for button handler. The class path? Okay, in the properties, there is a path tab in JBuilder, and you click on that, and then you tell it you want to set up a new one. You give it a name. You go, in the properties, you go out and you find the path that you want to add. Then you just go and you go to your autoexec.bat file, for example, on Windows. You look at what the class path is that's been set up for Java, and you just edit it like you would any other path file in DOS. If you're on Unix, you say class path equals dollar class path plus the new. Yeah, you can set properties. There is a system properties, system.get properties, system.set properties. If you go to the java.sun.com, they actually have the procedure. What you have to do is you have to get the properties, all of the properties, put them into a text file, because when you do set properties, you do them all. So you edit the text file to have the properties that you want for that application. And then you read them all in and set them. What? User.dir is one of the properties. Right, getting it is easier than setting it. Setting it, you have to have a properties object, and the properties object has to have all the properties in it. The good news is it's all text. Well, those aren't helping you on assignment 6, 7, and 8. Other questions on 6, 7, and 8? Okay, well, what we'll do, it sounds like tonight is demo night, so we'll do some of the practical demos that you need to have for going on. And then the other thing I will show is a demo of Java Beans. Okay, Java Beans. What is a Java Bean? You guys have all used Java Beans already without knowing it. There's another name for this. Component architecture. Or what I call it is programming in pictures. Okay, Java supports, it has a nice interface to programming in pictures. Some of you guys have seen these development environments where you program in pictures. That is, you have some kind of a menu of programming objects. You know this if you go into JBuilder and you go to the design view, the top toolbar is full of icons of different components. If you need a button, you click on a button, you put it in the window. You need a list, you click on the list, you put it in the window, you put it the size you want. Same as Visual Basic. Visual Basic is a component architecture. Okay? So you have these, and what you do is you have some kind of a graphic interface that allows you to take these components and put them out onto the palette. So you say, okay, I want one of those, and I want one of those, and I want one of those, and I want one of those. And then what you do is you connect them. You say, I want this to be connected to that, and that to be connected to that, and that to be connected to that, and that to be connected, and so on. And there are a variety of ways that different component architectures have for connecting the dots. Some of them have any of you guys seen Lego Mindstorm? You know, you play with that, right, on your spare time? Okay, and they have a component architecture where you have a robotic function, and it's got some colored tabs on one side of these things, like a red and a green, and then it's got a colored tab there, and what you're, isn't this right? This is how it works, right? And you can say, I take the red from here, and I can hook it to the red there. If I have a green, I can hook it to the green. If this is a blue, it will go to a blue somewhere. Well, that's pretty easy. It's a lot easier than Java, isn't it? Yeah. So, programming in pictures. Then when you're all done, you click a button that says run the program. It goes and does something. You decide if it does what you want. If it didn't, then you edit the connections and so on, and you add more things. So you have a palette of input data things. You have a palette of some kind of functional things. You have a palette of output data things. It originally was used for activities like image processing and so on, where there were fairly well-known steps for going from raw data to displayable images. And you didn't have to write the code to do it. Okay? So it was like a customizable Photoshop type thing. And you got to write the whole thing yourself. Java Beans is such. Java Beans are these. Okay? Java has this property called introspection, where you can look into a class, I've mentioned this before, and every class has within it all of its access specifiers, all of its return types, all of its method names. It knows all of its components, it knows all of its methods, and which method is part of which class, and on and on and on. So what you can do is, from the outside, you can get at the properties of every class. And that allows you to say, I want to hook this to that. And what you get when you make your intention known that you're going to hook this to that, is it gives you a list of, okay, what method here is going to go to what method there. Right? So the classes all reveal their properties and methods if you want them to. And the way it works is it relies on you using the syntax of getter, setter. So if you have properties in your program and you say, I want to change a property, it says, okay, here's the get method, here's the set method for it. One gives you what the value of the property is, the other one allows you to change it. There is a Java Bean development kit called cleverly BDK that you get from, guess who, sun.com. So if you go to Google and you type BDK download, you get to the download site of the BDK, you can download it, install it on your computer, and run it. And then you're off building Java Beans. So I'll show a demo of that as well. It's an old one, but it works. writes code. It writes code that you can edit. It writes it on the fly. It writes code that you can edit. When you're all done with this, you get the program that you want. You can save that program. It actually rebuilds it, recompiles it, reruns it on the fly. When you're happy with it, you can save it as a deployable jar file or an applet or whatever. It's just swell. So after you guys have, I saved this till the last because you guys are going to say, well, look, if I can program in pictures, who needs to? Huh? Or you will say, huh, there's no future in programming because even a kid can do it. See? So Mindstorm, right? That's for kids, right? The right robotic programs. Well, big kids. It's actually kind of complicated. You wouldn't want to give it to your 8-year-old without help. But yeah, that's mean, huh? Yeah. Yeah, the component architecture is one step up from the GUI designer stuff. So if you look at JBuilder, for example, JBuilder uses beans, but they don't use them in a component architecture environment where you're actually developing an application the way you do with a bean development kit. And you will hear about enterprise Java beans, and what you can do is you can design a set of tools to get a certain set of jobs done that are repetitive, kind of programming tasks, and then you use those over and over and over again in a large group so that people can write their code and it'll all end up being interoperable. Right? You have company records, you have company databases, you write a bean that goes out and gets a certain kind of data from a certain kind of record and so on. And you put that on the palette, and then anybody can use it. So if someone comes along and they say, I need a new interface that does this, there's already a beam that not only gets the data, but displays it. You could even deploy it to end users to you know, here's your database product, and right, and here are the tools that you need if you want to customize it somehow. And you can get your kid to do it for you.
If we took a moment back to jar file, that would be the way to distribute that would be the way to distribute something to do.
Like this. That's exactly how these are distributed, yes.
And so you create the jar file, has everything you need in it.
Including the manifest that shows what's in it. Right. And it takes advantage of the fact that objects are readable and writable. Writable and readable. That is, Java objects, if they are serializable, you guys have all heard that word? That's another one of these object-oriented words I really love. There is a serializable interface. It used to be, if you wanted to do Java beans, you had to implement serializable. Now you don't, but you do anyway. It's kind of a compatibility thing. Serialize means you can read it and write it. Send it as a stream, read it as a stream. Okay? So you create a window, a frame, an object like that. You can actually take the window in its current state and write it to the disk. And then you can read it from the disk. You can take it and write it to a URL. What's a URL? It's exactly the same as a file, only it has a protocol at the beginning. So like file colon slash slash. Right? That's a protocol. So you can actually read and write objects across the network from one computer to another and so on.
Right.
Correct. There are certain things you can't serialize. For example, you can't serialize a thread because threads are in unstable states. This is the kind of stuff we do in advanced Java as we figure out how to serialize objects. But if you look in the I/O project, you'll see how easy it is. We actually do read and write objects in that project, among other things. There's binary data, there are objects, there are all the basic data types and so on. There are, as I've mentioned before, date objects, etc. So that's it's an interesting demo to go through just to see how easy it is to do various things if you ever need to. But these are all advanced topics and will not help you in your assignment. But it lets you know how much there is past where you're at, in case you're curious, is that all there is? All this class is for, once again, is to learn the basic syntax of the language, how to organize a program, how to put together multiple classes to get a job done, teach you the basic jargon, and to show you how that jargon translates into physical pieces of program. So we did the data hiding, encapsulation, the inheritance, finally the polymorphism. We did different access specifiers. We got ourselves in trouble by having cross-package variables that we had to either change permissions or write getters and setters. That's just jargon. The actual code is just business as usual in the programming world. Object-oriented programming and Java have their own way of talking. It's just a vocabulary. It's just another language on top of a language. That's what we learned in here. There's lots more past that. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll do a couple of, we'll do a drawstring and then we'll have a break and then we'll do Java beans. One of the things we used to do in our C classes, we actually went into how this stuff works and the underpinnings of it, which is with, have any of you guys ever seen a program called Stella or iThink? It's two different names for the same program. It's a very old in the world of component programming. It's like 12 or 15 years old. System modeler. It allows you to design simulations of businesses and this kind of thing, and conveyor belts, manufacturing processes, and so on. And it's all component architecture, programming, and pictures. Very powerful tool, and the underlying code is very simple. LabVIEW is another very powerful set of tools that are component architecture. Really does a lot of things. The underpinning is very simple. It's all done with pointers to functions. What a thought. Yeah, pointers, exactly. Something Java hides from you so that you'll be safe. Any of you guys who are C++ programmers know just how much trouble you can get into, how fast, with pointers and mishandling them. Any one of you who have had your system crash have encountered what happens when programmers try to program with pointers. Any of you guys ever had a computer crash on you? Ha ha. Well, it's good having the remote. Of what? Oh, that's that other language. Yeah. Do people still get jobs? There's a lot of jobs out for Visual Basic not too long ago. How's the world for jobs out there now? No one knows. .NET is the new, it's like Studio used to be. Well, it's nice to know that these guys have not lost their touch. Yes. What am I doing there? That's not equal to null. Can you all see that? Right, I'm going to create a variable which is a string type, and I'm going to make sure it's not null. And then I'm going to call g dot drawstring, and those are the arguments, string x, y. That's the x and y location on the window. So my window is 300 by 300, so I'll put a string down near the bottom of the window somewhere. I'll put it at x20, first the string, and then I'll put it 20 over, and I'll put it 240 down. Oops, wait a minute. Set bound, yeah, that's okay. No, wait, let's see, that's 100 down, 140 down, 240 down. I better put it a little bit lower. I'll put it 280 down. Okay, so one of the things I can do is I can just set the string. In the constructor method, it is a string. Uh-oh. Well, if you expected a closing brace, why didn't you put it in? You guys ever say that to your computer? Okay, well, see, I didn't quite put it. See, there it is, right under the edge. I'll make this a little bit smaller, and then we'll be able to see it. We'll make that, let's see, that's the text area. I'll just make it 100 high. So here's the string down here. Okay, with g.drawstring. No, it doesn't automatically do anything. If you want to, what you have to do, and I have a sample of this in the handouts, is you have to get the font metrics, which then tells the, what it returns is it returns how much space characters take in a string, so you know how many pixels it is, and then you have to do all of that stuff. But yes, you've been using that for your changing your fonts and whatnot, or not? Right. Well, there's the font class, and then there's a font metric, which is the measurements of the font, which basically it translates characters into pixels. And you have to do that kind of thing. So it's much easier, obviously, to use a text area than it is to use than to draw things. The drawing strings and so on really is for, yes. When you want to close which window? The little window?
Yeah.
Okay, well then you can't have system exit in the little window because that exits your whole program. What you have to have is you have to have little window dot set visible false that hides it. Little window dot dispose that gets rid of it. You know, so it's garbage collected. But yeah, when you're dealing with strings on the background with g.drawstring, it's really for graphic displays and whatnot, and there's a lot of calculation that goes into getting things in the right place and so on without having to do trial and error every time. Because if you, you know, if you have it something where you change the fonts and all that, it's going to obviously change the pixel width, and then you have to recalculate the X and Y position. Okay, the only thing this doesn't do is this doesn't connect this string to the outside. But what I can do is up in A5 here, when I'm reading the student I.2 string, I could actually say, MF.S equals something like that. And now you see that the student name, the last one that I read in the loop, it actually displayed all three, but it displayed them so fast you couldn't see it. But what I did was I read it from the file, I put it in the text area, and I also drew it on the background simply by saying that the string in the frame was equal to the student 2 string return value. And then what you can do is if you have several strings, you can, in the paint method, you can be calculating the new Y position so that each one goes so many below the one before it. If you had several to put up in the window, you would start them off near the top and just add 20 or 30 to Y, depending on the font size. And it would be moving it down the window. Because you can't put a carriage return. It doesn't make any sense to draw a carriage return. Basically, the carriage return is change the value of Y and keep the value of X constant, then it's like a new line, meaning go to the next line at the beginning, and if you move X, then it'll actually go diagonally. Yeah, you can draw it on a canvas, you can draw it on anything that will let you draw. Anything that has a paint method will let you draw a string on it. Repaint calls update, update calls paint. Right. That's the flow of control. What was the name of that little program I wrote last semester? Someone asked me, could I do a thing with text that scrolled across the bottom of the window? That was funny, too. That is kind of a problem that one of the students just threw it out in class, and it said, how long would it take to write a thing that had scrolling text? And it turns out to be really simple to do using this kind of thing. Because you just put it in a loop. In fact, I think I just made a panel and I changed the X and Y of the panel or something.
You moved the panel back and forth.
It was really cheesy and it made it look like the made it look like the string was scrolling. I should look that one up and well, I don't see it here. So. It'll be in one of the end. Yeah, one of those. Oh, well, I'll look for that some other time. Okay, what was another question that we wanted to get answered while we were doing this? Incidentally, if you have a... Well, let me just open anything here. If you want to make a jar file with JBuilder, they actually have a deployment wizard which goes through and it says what's the manifest file, which are the classes, what are the images that you want, do you have any data files, and so on. And it builds a jar file for you without having to know jar dot. -c, which means create, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So look that one up. You're getting ready to send me your jar file for your assignment 8.
Is this something with a
font, new font. Got it?
I think so.
Okay. And then you tell it like how that it font dot bold comma book size 20. Well, apparently we made it too big. Let's see. There it is. So it's pretty straightforward once you know how.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the set font takes a font as an argument. And you can do that for the graphic. You can also just do it for the window. Up at the very top in the constructor, you can call set font for the window. You can do it. Anything that takes text, you can set the font.
It's localized just for that object.
Right.
If you want to do it with only a single string in a list or something,
then you would set it and then set it back. So what you really want to do is get a font, save it in old font, set new font, and then set old font again. Stack overflow are easy. Who can tell me what stack overflows come from? A special kind of runaway loop. If you have a hierarchy and you instantiate the superclass in the subclass, or the subclass in the superclass, you're going to get a stack overflow. Because the superclass constructor gets called automatically when you make the subclass constructor, which then calls the, and then eventually you run out of memory. So some of you have had programs this semester where you started the program up, everything ran fine, and then it stopped. Or you started the program up and nothing happened for a really long time, and then it crashed. And those are symptoms of having a runaway hierarchy where the constructor, you're into a constructor loop where one constructor is calling the other, is calling the one, is calling the other. In a it just keeps creating it till it can't create anymore. Very exciting, sort of. Who had the program last night that ran for 30 seconds and then quit? It took a really long time to draw an image. And what was that from? From not calling repaint. Right. So if you wait long enough, that's the other thing that happens. If you don't repaint, let's say you change the appearance of your window and you don't call repaint. Well, if you wait long enough, you will eventually do something that kicks off repaint automatically. Or you can just call repaint and then it happens right away. Okay, yeah, there's a lot of spooky things that happen with interfaces. And we found that one where yours, the program that you wrote, Lenore, just sat there and we just couldn't get it to repaint, so finally we just played a trick on it to make it work. So it's still a little iffy. Okay, let's take a break, and after the break, we will look at a Java Bean. I will get the Bean development kit started because it actually runs under DOS, of all things. Okay, so you go out to google.com or wherever, you type in BDK space download. You will go to the download site at Sun that has the Bean development kit. And you do what they say to install it. It makes a directory on the C drive cleverly. In this case, it's BDK 1.1. It is very old. And they provide a tool called a Beanbox, which is a place that allows you to explore component architecture and see what it does. So you go to the Beanbox and you say run. Now the question about, I'm sorry you can't read this, the question about class paths, one of the things they do here when you run this is here's where they build the new class path. So you can see an example of that. There it is. Did you memorize it? Okay, so over here I have a palette of Java Beans. And here I have a place where I can put the Java Beans and connect them together to do something. And here I have a box, which is a property, which is the getter setters for the different properties of each of the beans. Okay? These are the properties of the BeanBox class, because the BeanBox is actually a Java Bean as well. Any program that you write in Java can be turned into a Java Bean very quickly. I'm not responsible for anything you see here. But yes, it's a DOS program that works in Windows. Because it's a Java program, it shows you the power of Java. Right? It's like a bridge between the past and the future. Okay, so I pick a Java Bean. I put it over here. Here's a Java Bean, okay, which is the Java Juggler. Okay, I pick another Java Bean, which is a button. And when I put the button here, if you look over here, the label for the button is up here. Type the word start, and then you see over here it becomes the word start. And let me pick a different button, an orange button. Stop. What's that? It has different color buttons. This is just for demos, right? That's all this is for. Okay, so if I push the buttons, they, you know, do button things, but they don't do anything. But what I can do is I can connect button push, action performed. See, there's a little rubber band. I can connect it to that, and then it shows me all of the methods which are available to me. Now it's going out and writing the code to make the connection, and when I push the button, it stops juggling. I can go up here, button push, action performed, start juggling. Now it starts, now it stops. Oh yeah, if you deploy it, you can then look at the code.
Right.
Yeah, that's what happens when it says it's making the adapter class. It's just writing a Java program for you. It says, you know, it, what it does is it says it takes the action perform method, it puts the code in there that says call juggler dot stop juggling, juggler dot start juggling. Yeah, right, right. What? What you have to do is you have to write your own bean, and then you can put any method you want in it, do anything you want in it. And if you follow the rules of getters and setters, you've got a Java bean. Okay, so it does those things, and then you can do things you probably saw. For example, you can bind property, and so I take the background color, and I bind it to the background color of the other button, and they both turn blue. Okay, if I go here and I edit the property, they both turn pink. So you can, this is called binding. You can bind properties, activities, etc., so that when something changes in one, it changes in the other, etc. So there's really a lot of different things you can do with these Java beans. When this is all done, it writes an applet. The animation down there is just a panel with a display of a rotating GIF file in it. See, here's another one. Done. Okay. There's a molecule, and it, you know, does 3D things, and you can pick different molecules and so on. Okay, so anything you write in Java, basically you can turn it into a bean, and then you, if you've written your method so that you say get property, set property, the properties show up in the property box. You can have things connected to when you change the label, it does something for you, and on and on. Okay? That's it in a nutshell. So why do you guys have to write it? See how easy assignment 8 would be if you wrote it all in Java Beans? The only problem is you have to write the Java Beans in the first place to do it. Okay, so after you've written a Java Bean, let's say, let me just get out of this and get back into JBuilder so you can see there's a connection between this and what you already know. Okay, you see up in these toolbars, one of the things that you can do is you can, whoops, where is it? Here's the other. These are actually Java beans that were written and then put onto this toolbar. So I can configure the palette. Oops, it will start up, I hope. There it is. Okay, so these are different Java beans. These are just, you know, some of them are the same. some of them are different, where you just took a random Java program, said add it. Let's see. I'm just saying, add some package, select a class from a package, then you go off to your classes, you find something that you wrote, you open it, it gives you all of the classes in the package, you add the component page other, or you can put it onto any of the tabs that you want, you say install, okay. Now there's an A3 person class on my beanbox, and so on. Well, in this case, it's not something that you can see, so what? All right? But if I come up here to File, and I say New Frame, okay, it writes a frame for me. If I go to the Design Mode, there's my frame. Now I can take one of the beans that I wrote, hopefully. Let's see, one that does something. And I can drag it down into my frame. And then I get the bean onto my window. I compile my program. I run my program. I can see the thing in the window. Okay. That's all the steps there are to this. Now, of course, you're not going to memorize all those steps tonight when I do it like this, but you can basically take any class that you write, hopefully a displayable type of thing or an action type of thing or something, and you can very quickly then add that class as a component to the toolbar, and then you can use it over and over and over. So the things like the Enterprise Java Beans, well, if you go out and you get the JBuilder super professional version, it's got all these database access tools and whatnot. It's got a very elaborate set of components that you can use and reuse and modify, etc. If I look at the code, well, let's go to the source. And there it is, right there, plot3D equals new plot3D. Well, that's how it does it. And here's where it adds it to the display. Get content pane, because it's a J component. You have to call get content. Any of you guys that use like swing classes, you can't just add things, you have to get content pane dot add. But that's if you don't remember that, as soon as you run your program, it says you have to do that, you go back and you do it. Because, see, this is a J frame, not a frame. If it was a regular frame, it would just say add. Okay, so there you add it, and it put it in the middle, because it's a border layout, the default layout. Well, the J frames are designed to have several layers, one of which you can put components in, one of which you draw on, and so on. The old frames, remember, you draw and put components all in the same level. So if you go to the Sun tutorial on swing components, they show you the parts. A window is actually made up of several layers, and it shows you what the layers are and how to manipulate them. So, see, doesn't Java Bees, doesn't that look useful? And I would guess that in the long term, I keep predicting this, in the long term, programming in pictures will become more and more of a force in programming. Now, the people that know how to make the pictures you program with are going to be the programmers, and everybody else is going to be users that use those pieces to write their own sub-programs or extensions to your program. It is turning into just what we predicted, which is programmers are the blue-collar workers of the 21st century. Okay, I will see you guys upstairs in a few minutes. We are working on 6, 7, and 8, I hope.